Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and welcome back to the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time finding us, welcome. We're so glad you're here. It's great to check out episode one, where we talk about the history of Story Night and the vision and purpose. And if you've been listening for a while, you know that we have been taking some of these initial episodes to meet several ladies who are part of the Story Night team. Well, tonight, my guest is Jessica, and she's sort of indirectly part of the Story Night team. She works with Representative Elmer, and as many of you know, Representative Elmer is the one who is providing the platform for us to bring you Story Night so we can keep bringing these stories of hope to women all over. So Jessica, thank you so much for being willing to share your story and how you got connected with Lucetta and the job that you're doing. But before we go through kind of your whole life story, would you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jessica. I feel like we're going to have a fun dynamic back and forth with Jessica. But I do work with Representative Elmer as her chief of staff in the Capitol. I was born and raised down in Southern Oregon in Grants Pass, but I just moved from Northeast Salem over to North Kaiser earlier this year. You know, I found the best stress relief for working in politics for quite a few years now. Actually, since 2017, I've been in the Capitol building. The best stress relief I've found is pyrotechnics. Something about being able to spend an entire day wiring methodically using your brain. You push that first button and the first firework goes and life is way better.
Yeah, I actually just learned this about you. That's not something you hear very often. That's like that great, you know, tell somebody one thing about you that it's like the two truths and a lie kind of a game. You've probably had some really good icebreaker conversations with that.
I'd be lying if I said I had never used that in that exact icebreaker scenario. It is one of my favorite go-tos.
Okay, so before we talk about your childhood, I'm just curious, when did you start setting off fireworks? You're doing this like professionally, sort of, right?
Yes. Many people don't realize the Office of the State Fire Marshal actually does license pyrotechnicians. So you can work in the fireworks industry. It's kind of more of a hobby job for me. My day job, I'm with Representative Elmer. And, you know, in the off season or when I need some good stress relief, there's a few companies around. I work with one typically out of Canby, but they have us kind of as contractors for the day, and we go off and we work with a local fire marshal. The company's permitted everything, and we wire up the fireworks for, like, think of your typical 4th of July, or if there's a local carnival, Newburgh Old Fashioned Days does a fireworks show, things like that. We show up, we set up, we wire the fireworks, we shoot the show, we clean it up, and we help the organization or the city have a fun time with fireworks.
With your career in politics, I'm sure you've dealt with some metaphorical fireworks in your time. So let's start at the beginning. I'm so excited to have you tell your story and so that we get to know you better. We start at the beginning. Where are you from? And can you tell us a little bit about your childhood?
So I love how you phrased that, because something I've realized as I go through life is where are you from and where do you live are two completely different questions. Mm-hmm. So even to this day, when somebody asks me where I'm from, my brain goes back to childhood and growing up in Southern Oregon. I was born and raised in Grants Pass on 5 acres, and I absolutely loved it. We had a creek going through the property. My brother did 4-H with pigs. I had horses with my mom, had a bunny, we had dogs and chickens and cats, and I'm probably missing an animal somewhere in there, but it was a lot of fun. I absolutely loved it. I remember building our family house, we moved to the property and built the house. We financed it as we went. And for nearly 10 years, my family spent building that dream house, and we did a lot of it ourselves. And it was a lot of fun. I wouldn't change that experience for the world. I was a quiet jeans and a t-shirt, ponytail sort of girl, true Oregonian, didn't use the umbrella, never wore a jacket, always jeans and a t-shirt. It could be winter, it could be summer, but I loved growing up down there. So part of living on the 5 acres was there was lots of room. I have one sibling. I call him my little big brother. He's 6 feet tall and a brick of muscle. And if you could see me right now, you'd see I am far from 6 feet tall and far from a brick of muscle as well. So part of growing up on the property was we had the creek, and our parents really tried to instill in us a work ethic and the creativity to not really have to rely on anyone else if you really didn't have to. And in that, we had our own little garden. And my brother and I were told by our father that if we helped out with the garden, we could pick some of the things that were planted. And for me, that was always flowers. I loved growing up with the flowers, being able to walk through the field and pick kind of, it's going to sound funny, I enjoyed growing the flowers, but I also enjoyed being able to be surrounded by all of the little fun side pieces that really help make the bouquet. So like a sprig of wheat in there or something like that, that I just felt so lucky to be surrounded by in the way that I grew up, that it wasn't something that we grew intentionally. It was just part of what nature gave us and the beauty of everything. But in order to get those flowers planted, Dad had told us that we needed to pull wheat. We had to pull our weight. We had to do our fair share to help out. And in that, he also said, you know, if we understand that we, meaning my father and my mother, understand that you do need a couple bucks if you want to buy the seeds for flowers and things like that. So if you pull a bucket of weeds, you can have a dollar. Now, my brother and I, we had very different approaches to this, and we knew it wouldn't be easy because nothing in life is. And that's also another lesson my father liked to make sure to instill in us. We went out there, and these weren't small buckets, these were 5 gallon buckets. And we went out there with our 5 gallon buckets, and we each filled up our buckets. Now, my brother liked to fluff the weeds a little bit, so it looked full, but it wasn't really as full as it could be. I spent a bit longer and I pulled more weeds and put them in the bucket. I kind of anticipated that Dad wasn't going to fall for fluffing the weeds, so I filled my bucket more. We went and we got my dad and told him, okay, we filled up our buckets. And he smiles and says, great job. And then he puts his giant boot in the bucket and smashes it and smiles and says, looks like there's a little more room. I bet you could fill it up some more. Go out there and fill it up some more. So we go out there and we fill up the bucket some more, and anticipating Dad's going to step on the weeds again to crunch them down, we fill it up even more. We push on it a little bit. We make sure like we've got a full bucket this time. Takes my brother a little bit longer because initially he hadn't filled up his bucket quite as much. And we think we've got it. We think we've got a dollar. We take it back to Dad. Dad steps on the weeds. He goes, okay, good job. You have filled the bucket. We think we're going to get a notch on the wall. Dad's got some chalk hanging on the wall. He's written our name so we can tally mark and see how many dollars we're going to get. And we're looking at him all excited. He gets an even bigger smile on his face and he goes, okay, now go leave those buckets out in the sun for an hour and we'll see how they're doing after that. The weeds are going to wilt and then there's going to be some more room in the bucket. So we go out, we leave the buckets out there, and we filled up the bucket one more time and we smashed it. And Dad smiled as he put his boot in the bucket and made sure it was full. And that was our one tally mark. And that was our $1.
And he is
So,
clearly teaching you to have a solid work ethic.
yes, absolutely. That was something I have always carried through life. I'm not a person that deters. It makes me want to work harder, and there's a reason behind everything. And I think that's the really important part of the lesson. It wasn't working hard for no reason. It wasn't taking a shortcut to avoid having to do something. it was doing it right the first time and really making that impact in my memory growing up.
And it sounds like, too, just that lesson of doing your complete best and not shortcutting anything. Is there any more you can do? Is there any, can you take this any further? And that I imagine took you through school lessons and career lessons to be that person that's going to give the full 110%.
Absolutely. And growing up, that was always something that's an interesting combination for my personality and who I was growing up and who I feel like I've grown up to be now. A lot of people think you have to have incredible confidence and love public speaking and all of these things to work in the Capitol building and to work in politics in general. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to find out I was happily in the back of the room and would panic if I was picked on in class to speak or to read publicly or anything like that. But I loved all the different opportunities that always saying yes and growing as a person took me through. When there were new opportunities where I could learn something, it made a big difference. Joining different clubs in high school, especially, I was the perpetual secretary of the Grants Pass High School chapter of Future Business Leaders of America, or FBLA. And through that, I made a ton of friends and had incredible opportunities.
I would imagine you would have been the one voted in high school, like most likely to succeed or something like that.
I think if anybody knew who I was, that was possible. But I tried really hard to stay off of everybody's radar. I was a head down and focus in my friend group. I think that maybe that would be possible. But for the school, we were actually a decent sized school. And I don't think many people knew who I was. And I was very okay with that. I was not wanting to make a name for myself or be trending on the internet or anything like that.
Yeah, well, props to you for being willing to come on to, a podcast and tell your story.
I am admittedly quite nervous, so thank you.
You're doing great. I so appreciate you taking time to do this. I know this is a little out of the comfort zone, but you are awesome. And I think our listeners need to meet you too. All right. Well, let's finish up your high school time and get you off to college.
So high school, I think one of the most momentous accomplishments that I'm always going to take with me is, I talk about volunteering and being involved in the Future Business Leaders of America Club, which transitioned into helping the Lions Club for a little while. But all of this is on top of classes. And I think that's something that the working in the legislature, I've heard more and more from students as they engage in the process of policy making is, but I still have to do school. There's so many of these other things going on at the same time, but I still have to do school. And for me, growing up in the way that I did and the work ethic instilled in me with my family and not coming from a ton of money necessarily, college was always on my mind. And how was I going to make it to college without necessarily the big check associated with it, all those dollars? Like I said, I tried to keep my head down. I didn't go do all these crazy things necessarily. I mean, I had my own fun, but there was nothing that really would get me a scholarship. And so I focused as hard as I possibly could in high school to take as many of the credits have changed the name in what they're called. But in my day, I'm turning the ripe age of 30 this year.
You're so old.
They were called, right? They were called 2+2 credits, or college now, I think is what they were for a little while. Whatever community college credits I could get, as well as taking AP classes and then sitting for those exams, hoping that I could get like university level college credit as well. My junior year, I went headlong into that. I went to test my work ethic to the limits that I could possibly test them to. And the courses that I was enrolled in high school, it was the equivalent, I found out later, of 26 college credits. A full-time college load is measured at 12 credits. So I went a little crazy into that.
So just for perspective, you were doing more than double a normal college load as a junior in high school.
It was intense. It was very intense, but it was worth it. I took AP US History and AP European History the same year. And the way those AP exams were scheduled, they were both scheduled on the same day, with about 3.5, 4 hours scheduled for each test. And because one ran a little bit long than the other, and I used my full time, I only had about a 5 minute break between. And I'm not a crier, but when I got my test results back and I had passed both of those tests, I remember crying because I was so excited that I had passed them both.
That's like getting close to 8 hours of testing. Did you ever sleep?
I think that may have been what prepared me for legislative session and the lack of sleep that we get right now, because I did not get much sleep my junior year of high school. I
No,
was
no.
all classes and homework all the time.
But you made it through, and then little did you know, you were on your way to politics and a life of no sleep.
Yes. It made a big difference though, because I went straight out. Everybody dreams of, going off to a big university and getting out of that little town. For me, I liked my town. I liked where I grew up. I didn't really want to move, but I knew college was the next step. And with all those credits that I had gotten, I ended up being able to go to community college full time for 2 terms, and then taking 2 credits of PE spring term that year. And that was all I needed to pay for in order to get my 2-year transfer degree before going up to Western Oregon, which was really exciting. It helped a lot.
That's amazing. That work ethic, that really, that bucket of weeds, I can see that going through your life.
Yeah, it paid off. And then going up to Western Oregon University, I finally got to do what I wanted to do, as silly as that sounds. I always get a little giggle. I have a Bachelor of Science in political science and economics. So one could say I have a BS in political science, which is always a good laugh for me. And throughout my time doing that, I met so many incredible people. And of course, you go off to college and your mind is open to the world. And moving from Southern Oregon to up near Salem, Monmouth area is where Western Oregon University is. And it was a complete culture shock of how different the world is up here after having grown up in one place the entire time. But it was a lot of fun meeting so many new people and trying to find my way in the political world. And then I was able to finish my 4-year degree in 3 years. So I did 1 year of community college and then 2 years at Western Oregon to get my degree. And I popped out the other side feeling like I knew who I was more as a person. And, it's funny to say as an adult, we hold on to certain things, but I loved Winnie the Pooh growing up. And so it was a very easy choice for me when I sent out my little graduation announcements to everybody. There was a quote that I used from Winnie the Pooh: "You're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think."
Well, I have to tell you that I am recording on my end of this podcast episode in my 4-year-old's room, and that quote is right above me.
That's perfect. I love that.
Just for you.
That's fantastic. Like,
So often, great life lessons and great points are found in children's books and children's movies and shows, and Winnie the Pooh is amazing. And hopefully, that sentence didn't just roll off our listeners. So, just to remind you, ladies, you are braver than you believe. You are stronger than you seem, and you are smarter than you think. And if life is giving you a bucket that says you got to fill it with weeds, and you keep trying and kind of keep getting knocked back to start over again to reach this point, you can do it. You can keep that dedication and that motivation and reach that achievement. And you are such an example of the little farm girl that's just gonna grit her way through and make this happen. Here you are, a 4-year degree in 3 years, which, if we heard the beginning of your story, that should be no surprise to anybody. And then you when you finish college, it's like, okay, where do you go next? The world is open to you.
It is. You think you graduate college and there's just going to be this great paying job waiting for you. And I had a very harsh reality coming to me at that point that that is most definitely not the case, especially as a Republican in Oregon, where we're not in the majority. that was an even harsher reality coming to me, that there's not the same number of jobs available to Republicans in the state if you're wanting to work in politics with an openly partisan lens on it. So I really had to evaluate where I was going to go and what I was going to do. I'm really grateful that I started to get a dose of that reality my senior year of college. I applied for an internship in the Senate Republican Caucus office, and I got it. So that meant for the 2017 long session, I was serving as an intern and learning the best way I could, right in the thick of it, trying to learn the legislative process and navigating the Capitol. And after the long session, I think something a lot of people don't necessarily realize when they're getting into the field, especially, is that there's way more jobs in session. And what happens after session? Well, when we're not in session, it's called the interim. And our office budgets right now only have enough funding in them to have one staffer full time outside of session. So if you're that second person who's been brought in to learn and assist, you're cut after session. So where do you go and what do you do? And that's a very harsh reality for a lot of people, including myself, after that. So I finished my internship and I was ready to go, and there was no job, and there wouldn't be another job until probably February. Well, I got really lucky, and thankfully, even though I was the quiet, shy person in the back of the room who didn't want to draw attention to themselves, I had caught the eye of a few people in the building who were looking out for me, and they had some projects that they needed somebody who had that work ethic and that drive to go do. So I went and I worked on a referendum petition, which is 90 days of insanity. So a referendum petition is when the legislature's passed a bill and the governor has signed it, but it hasn't gone into effect yet. So if there's an emergency clause in a bill, the governor signs it and it instantly becomes a law. Most of the bills, it either goes into effect 91 days after or on January 1st of the next year. And a big reason for that is to allow for this referendum process. And the referendum is referring basically that bill to the voters for a vote. So you're saying, we think the legislature might have gotten this one wrong. We want to double check by asking the people to vote. Now, you don't just say, I want this to be referred to the ballot, and it just happens. You have to go get a specific number of signatures. And that was my job. I was going to go help get all those signatures. And it's a very large number. I can't remember what the number was then off the top of my head, but it's based on a percentage of voter turnout in, I believe, the previous gubernatorial election, so the election for governor. And I had the longest work week of my life when I was doing that referendum petition. I lovingly call us the crazy clipboard people. You're out at some public event, you're out at your Saturday market or the McMinnville UFO Fest, and you see somebody standing on the street corner, because that's a public space, with their clipboard, and they're trying to talk to anyone they can to share what is going on in this petition. And that was my job for 90 days.
Wow.
And the longest work week of my life was 108 hours. Oh, I was at the state fair from open to close every single day that week. I don't know if there are words to describe how ready I was for a nap after the state fair that year.
My goodness. Again, did you ever sleep? I feel like this should be the title of your story. Like, sleep, not like sleepless in Seattle, where, you know, sleepless in the Capitol, sleepless in something.
Knowing me growing up, I'm so not a morning person as well. I don't drink coffee, and I try really hard not to have caffeine, so it's effective when I need it. And, you know, with the job I picked, I think I really should have prioritized sleep.
Yes. 108 hours in a week.
I think it averages to like 15 hours a day or something like that for all 7 days. But It was a lot. It was worth it
Yeah.
because we made it to the ballot, but it
Yeah.
was a
And
lot.
that's not a job that, I mean, generally people aren't like, "Ooh, someone with a clipboard. Let me go talk with them and find out what I need to sign." Like,
Exactly.
a lot of people are like, "Clipboard person, run." They avoid or don't make eye contact, and not everybody, of course. But yeah, again, it's not one of those things where people are just excitedly running to chat with you.
The same could be said for politics as a whole. You're going to meet new people, and I had my 10-year reunion, and the amount of people who asked, "Oh my goodness, what did you go on to do?" And I explain excitedly, "I work in the Capitol for a state representative." And they go, "Oh wow, that's nice. Moving on." Nobody wants to talk to you about it. Because politics has become so divisive. Nobody wants to deal with it, especially people within my age range. You've just completely checked out because you don't want to deal with hearing the doom and the gloom and the fighting and all of that,
Right.
which so much of what we do in the Capitol building involves breaking through that. And you really have to learn to listen and learn, and not listen to respond, which I think is a bad reputation that politics and politicians have gotten, which is why I really value working for Representative Elmer, because you can see on her face when she's really, really listening to you. She cares about what you have to say. And for me at a young age, I also learned you want to listen to learn, not listen to respond. And my dad would tell me that all the time. I can see on your face, Jessica, you're listening to respond. You need to listen to learn. And
Wow.
so that's something I've carried through my political career and my crazy clipboard job. And I found that I could have those discussions with people who maybe still didn't want to sign the petition, which was completely okay. But we had better conversations if I was willing to hear them out and really learn where they were coming from. And it helped in my approach and how I was trying to get other people to potentially sign the petition or in the Capitol when I'm trying to pass a law or maybe advocate to amend something that we don't necessarily like. If you listen to understand where the other person is coming from versus just listening to respond and interject your own opinion into it, you get a lot farther in life.
Amen. I love that we get to have just real conversations on this podcast because probably there are women listening who, have maybe very different backgrounds or very different viewpoints or whatever. And just the chance to tell each other's story. Like, we're not on this podcast to, convince anybody anything. Like, nothing about the Story Night podcast is to get you to sign something or join something or, pay for something. It's just women telling their stories. And if we could allow that opportunity to get to know our neighbors and our coworkers and just people in our community, you find that, oh, we're all real people and we've all gone through real things. And there's encouragement to be found in everybody's story. Already, you've shared just some really great points and nuggets. I hope our listeners are taking note of these because I think they're great. So, if I'm doing the math right, you've been, working in politics for roughly 9 years or so.
I'm coming up on that. Yeah. 2017, the beginning of that session was my first real dipping my toe into working into politics.
Yeah. So you have done a lot of work, you've worked with a lot of different people, and you've had a lot of different political titles during that journey, right?
Yes. It's been an adventure for sure. So I was an intern, I was a referendum petition circulator. I was a legislative assistant for one of the representatives for a short session right after doing that. I went on to be a campaign manager. And then thankfully, I was rehired for the same person I had worked previously for. Worked a long session, first time being really truly paid for the work and securing the job versus just being an intern. And that's what gave me the foothold that I needed. Again, the budget's a little challenging. So being that second person, I didn't necessarily have a job after long session, but that office scraped together a few dollars to keep me on part-time. And I worked for four different offices to make one paycheck. Yeah.
And now there's like, you finally kind of made it because now you've got a
Yes.
full-time job with one person.
Yes, it's so exciting. I love being able to give my full energy and dedication to one district. And in all the places that I've worked before, I've never had any pieces in the district of Yamhill or Polk County, which is where Representative Elmer serves portions of. So it's been an exciting learning opportunity for me to get to know the community and get to know the district. And I'm just this big kid on my constant quest for why is what I like to tell people and why I love my job. I was that kid who constantly, we all know that kid who just asks why incessantly. There's never any answer that's good enough. And if you put 100 Republicans or 100 Democrats in the same room and you ask them one question, they're all going to have a slightly different answer to that question. And they're all going to be 100% certain that their answer is the right answer. And I think you see this in politics. So much of it is based on what your background is, what information you had at the time. So many different factors go into our worldview and how we make decisions. And so I like to tell people that I'm just a really big kid on my constant quest for why. And the Capitol's indulging me in every day being able to learn new things and to round out my worldview in how I make my own decisions.
It's really refreshing to hear you and Representative Elmer and several other people I've met just talk about how politics work, just more in an educational, informational style where no one's debating anything or arguing anything. You're just kind of learning about how this all works. And listeners, I'm going to have Jessica on a different podcast in the near future. We're launching a new podcast called Life and Legislation with Lucetta, and it'll be a chance to just get to know Representative Elmer personally and understand how all the politics work. And I mean, how does a bill become a law, and what do they do during their day? And we'll get a chance to talk with Jessica more on that podcast because I have so many follow-up questions for you. You know, how do you spend your days, and what is your job description? How did you get that? What's the most challenging thing you've had to do, or the most rewarding, and you know, maybe aspirations for the future, and just what does a chief of staff do? Because you're there full time for a whole year now. And so just all those questions of, well, if the state representative is off during parts of the year, but the chief of staff is on full time, how does that work? And so all those other questions, I'll get to pick your brain on that in the near future when we record that episode and launch that new podcast. But I'm so thankful that you took time to tell us more of your personal story and your narrative of your life thus far in these 30 years. Before we wrap up this episode, I always like to ask ladies if they have any life lessons or points of hope or encouragement to give to the listeners.
I think as I'm reaching my 30-year mark here, I've thought a lot about those different things. And I don't know if I have a perfect answer because everyone's a little bit different. But I always circle back to that Winnie the Pooh quote, "You're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think." And you don't have to be what people or society expect out of you. So much of who I've grown to become is being proud of what makes me different and being excited to share that with other people. And politics has been one of the most fun things that I'll do in life, but it is stressful. And when you need that stress relief, pyrotechnics will be there. And sharing both of those things with the people who I surround myself has been really exciting.
Well, I'm so grateful that I get to be on your team. You helped me so much when I had to go through all the onboarding process to technically be in this legislative world, even though I still don't feel like I am. But I would not have survived those weeks without your support and information. So thank you very, very much. We joke that you have to be named Jessica to work with Representative Elmer because there's a third Jessica that's involved in her team as well. So super fun.
Yes.
We want to, of course, thank Representative Elmer for providing the platform for Story Night, where we get to continue to bring these stories of just real women and real hope to all of our listeners. And I want to thank you, Jessica, for taking time to do this and stepping out of your comfort zone to come on a podcast and tell everybody your life story. I really appreciate it. Ladies listening, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you were blessed and encouraged by this episode and that you come back next time for our next episode. We also hope that you will join us at our next live Story Night event. It is coming up on Thursday, May 15th at the Grand Ballroom, downtown McMinnville. This event is free, but you do need to get a ticket so we know how many women we're feeding and how many chairs to have. You can get that free ticket at storynighthope.com. And you don't want to miss this story. Bethany Palacios will be sharing her story of starting life as an orphan in Liberia. But she is now Miss Black Oregon and just has an incredible, inspirational story to share with all of you. So hopefully you can come join us. You can meet Jessica in person there, as well as many of our other ladies who have shared their stories on this podcast. And if you happen to be listening to this after May 15th, 2025, you can still go on to storynighthope.com to find out which live event is coming next and register for that one. So invite all your girlfriends, teenagers, you're welcome to come to this one too. This is a great, great event for all ages, and we really hope to see you there. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and until next time, remember, you have a story. Your story matters, and you are not alone.